Let's begin. OpenAI for Language Learning explores artificial intelligence through informal conversations between two longtime colleagues in language education and digital technologies, Matt Schultz, professor of German and director of the Language and Applied Research Center at San Diego State University, and Phil Hubbard, senior lecturer emeritus at the Stanford University Language Center. Rather than offering hype or tutorials, these conversations, occasionally with guests, are based on learning, reflection, evidence, and lived experience, with no prior AI knowledge assumed. Language educators, learners, and enthusiasts are invited to an informed discussion where emerging technology meets human communication.
So, welcome to Opening AI for Language Learning. My name's Phil Hubbard.
And I'm Matt Schultz.
So we're going to continue from our first episode, and that one was titled, What the LLM? And in that, we talked about the first part of our paper, something we'll be referring to and giving you contact information for later in the talk. Matt, what were some takeaways from that first episode?
Yeah, we've always been planning a kind of series of these conversations, which we also want to launch as podcasts and perhaps record as a webinar, as we're doing today. And in the first part of the paper, which is a position paper on what teachers can and we believe should do in their professional development, basically, in the context of generative AI. So the first part of the paper is an introduction, in a sense, to generative AI and the kind of main cornerstones. We had half an hour also for that conversation. So we talked about large language models, which are at the core of this generative AI, and introduced a large language model. Takeaway. Large language model is basically a machinery that generates text that is very plausible, but generated mathematically. So it's actually, in a way, void of meaning because it's produced by a machine and the meaning gets imbued actually by the reader. That's kind of the central part.
Okay, so maybe I should give an overview of the whole paper so that people know what the context is for what we'll be talking about today. This paper, as Matt mentioned, it's a position paper published in the International Journal of Computer-Assisted Language Learning and Teaching. The goal is to help all the thousands, if not potentially millions, of current language teachers who all had their formal education before the release of ChatGPT in November 2022, public release, what really brought it into the classroom. In part one, as Matt mentioned, talked about the history of AI in language education and the technical fundamentals of generative AI's large language models. And the notion that what you're really doing is you're using numbers to create language forms. In part two, which we'll open with today, we talk about AI and generative AI competency or literacy frameworks that we use to inform our work. In part three, we gave the 10 things that we thought language teachers need to know now in order to be able to take off more independently on their AI journey. And then in part four, to talk about how you can do that, we motivated this notion of sustained integrated professional development for generative AI. And that we'll be talking about a couple of episodes from now. So in today's talk, we're gonna focus on four of these 10 areas. And then do the other six in the next one.
Phil, perhaps it's good, maybe also for our benefit, but certainly for people who are listening, why are these 10 knowledge and skill areas, as we identified them in the paper, why are they important? Why should people listen to us, basically? Why is this interesting and relevant in some way?
Good question. Well, again, our goal here is to really help teachers. So we wanted to provide some topics for a practical foundation rather than the sort of shotgun approach a lot of people are getting, if you'll excuse the metaphor, where you get bits and pieces but not a coherent basis, the way you would typically in a formal introduction to generative AI for language teaching. The goal is to help language teachers and language program administrators make informed decisions about this. And to make informed decisions, you have to have some information. You have to have brought that in and done some thinking about it and even some playing around with doing some of these. We'll be introducing these areas one by one, and then we'll each give an example or two of from our own experience or talk about things that we've read potentially that helped us fill in some of these gaps.
Yeah, and some of these we'll probably in later conversations and episodes kind of dive in a little deeper. So today is more or less an overview. Mm-hmm. I've already asked why we have those areas. The other question I have is, because you did most of the work on those mm-hmm. areas when we wrote the paper together, what was your initial basis for actually identifying those areas? So how come we've got those 10 areas?
Yeah, where did they come from? It wasn't just sitting down and brainstorming one day. So both of us already had some background in this, obviously, but when we were trying to make it more coherent and especially see what other people had said, I took a look at a number of frameworks for AI in education, and four in particular we talk about in the paper in a bit of detail. One of those, for example, is the UNESCO AI competency framework for teachers from their 2024 booklet. This is based on six key principles: the idea of inclusive digital futures, a human-centered approach to AI use, the fact that teachers have new roles, but they also have rights that need to be kept relative to the introduction of AI into classrooms. There should be trustworthy and environmentally sustainable AI. It should be applicable to all. And then one in particular that we're interested in is the sixth principle, which is the idea of lifelong professional learning. The UNESCO framework is built into three levels. Acquire is the most basic level, and then deepen, and then create at the expert level. We're really concerned here with acquire, although interestingly, in the process of acquiring, you should also be deepening in certain parts that are most relevant to you or that you already know more about, and should be creating at some level from the beginning. The other frameworks we looked at were EDUCAUSE, which is an organization of 2,100 member organizations, mostly in higher education, the International Society for Technology and Education, and Paradox Learning, which is a private company, but that has a really nice framework, I think teacher-friendly, for making sense of generative AI.
Great. Just to focus mm-hmm. our discussion today, and also this was the focus of this open access position paper, of course, Phil and I are looking at to help and support language teachers of world languages. All the frameworks that Phil just mentioned are broader than that. They're not specifically focused at language teachers. They're focusing on teaching, on teachers, on education, broadly speaking. So what we are trying to contribute with this paper and also with these conversations is to make it more concrete, more specific for language teachers in particular, because that's where our expertise and our interests also lie.
Right. And to do this, we did it with the idea that it's important to get a start and keep that in mind, that knowing something about these points is more important than knowing nothing about them. And then you make your own decisions about which ones to go into deeper.
Phil already kind of talked about, different parts of the paper. In the first part, of course, we looked at the kind of general introduction, a basic understanding of generative AI, and the abbreviation we are using is Gen AI. So we've done this in our first conversation. We'll probably return to a couple of things because this is a bit of a moving target in some way. But we're now moving into those 10 knowledge and skill areas, and Phil is going to introduce the first four.
Mm-hmm. Right. So getting that basic understanding you can get in all kinds of ways before you go into the more basic language education. And go ahead and start with Matt's part of our paper. Now moving on to the more fun part, I think. What do we think the teachers need to know something about now? And by now, we mean this is something you should be working on. And getting this foundation in relatively quickly over a period of weeks rather than months or years. We believe you probably, if you're interested enough to be listening to us at all, you probably already know something about all of these areas or many of them, but this will help you recognize perhaps some gaps in them. So the first four are prompting, ethics, chatbots, and translation. The first two are general to education, although there are specific parts of them that are needed for language education. But the use of chatbots and translation are really different in language teaching and learning, especially language learning, than they are in other areas where the goal is really to get information rather than to be moving into a whole new language and cultural system. So I'll define each of these very briefly, again, more detail in our paper, and then we'll give some examples of what we've done. And the examples are not in the paper. So this is us coming through and trying to follow our own directions and see what it is that we have as part of our knowledge and skill basis. Okay, we start with prompting. Prompting is basically telling the AI what you want it to do. You could have it explain. It could create something, like write a paper for you. It could improve something you've produced or that someone else has produced that you want to show ways of doing it better, to give feedback, a number of things that are relevant for language learning. In my case, I started with prompting just a few days after ChatGPT was released in November of 22. And in that case, I was just following the instructions of my step-grandsons who immediately got into it and introduced me to ChatGPT. Early on, I got some good materials from Nick Peachy's website. And there was a prompt book called Camp GPT that has since disappeared from the web. I can't even find it or haven't been able to find it on the Internet Archive, but it had a lot of really good examples. And they were, again, quite teacher friendly and very concrete. Most recently, I've gotten into a Google Introduction to AI course on Coursera, which has one of its modules just on prompting. And if you really want to know what to do, just as I did, try a quick search for free AI prompts for language teachers and see what comes up.
I find it interesting to think about prompting because it was a very short time ago. In 23, 24, there was even a word, prompt engineering. Right. And there were people who predicted that this would be the next very lucrative line of jobs, basically. Just speaking for myself, I haven't heard recently anybody talk about prompt engineering. The whole thing has kind of changed quite a bit. The buzzword these days in this area very often is context. That you put your requests, as Phil explained, into context when you interact with a chatbot, with a generative AI tool. And that very often means that this is done in a dialogue. It becomes a genuine chat. Using my own example, very often it has happened to me that my first prompt was too broad, basically, and I did not get the response I wanted and had hoped for. So I would simply follow up and say, no, this is not what I meant. I meant this. Mm-hmm. And it turned into a genuine conversation, sometimes even resolving ambiguity and things like that. So that's something to bear in mind, is it is a conversation with a machine, basically, that we're dealing with. For language teachers, the interesting thing is the word input, which has been used in language teaching and language education quite a lot. The prompt basically is the technical input, is the input for the machine. Mm-hmm. Kind of turns things in an interesting way.
Yeah, I think the main point here is that prompting in a way is like web search used to be. And you could do a web search the first time you got on the web. But the more you did it and the more you reflected on the results you got and, dealt with frustrations on occasion and just didn't take whatever you found as what it was you were looking for, you kept getting better and better at web search. And I think the same thing is what you need to do with prompting. Certainly, it's the track I'm taking. I don't think I have mastered prompting at all. But I'm better at it now than I was a year ago.
Yeah, it's a process to be continued.
Yeah. Okay, moving into ethics. So ethics can be defined in a lot of ways. For our purposes, we're thinking of it as awareness and mitigation of this new set of issues that are specific to Gen AI. For example, the most basic, well-known one is using it to cheat. So in my case, I had already done quite a bit of dealing with ethical concerns in using technology in general, whether I was using it for writing or for a listening class or something like that. But this is a new area. It's not just academic misuse, although that's a big part of it. It's also student privacy and even your own privacy as a teacher, your protection of the data and deciding what data you might want the Gen AI companies to have access to. There are well-cited built-in biases based on the fact that this was trained on the web. And the material on the web is biased. What I hadn't come across much until I started working on this 2025 chapter with Louise Ohashi was environmental impact. And I'm reading more and more about that now, how much energy it takes, and even more surprising to me, how much water it takes to cool off these huge server farms that are running. In that chapter, Louise and I did, we came up with 7 emerging principles for using, for being ethical. And the one that sort of rules them all is to build ethical considerations into Gen AI use as standard practice. whether for your students or for yourself?
Yeah, ethics, of course, is a huge topic in any area. And if one combines this with these rapid developments in generative AI, it becomes a humongous area. And there's a lot of discussion about it. Phil, you mentioned the environmental concerns already. There are economic concerns, there are social concerns, there are social justice concerns, labor legislation, whatever. There are many, many different areas, some of which I hadn't even thought about originally. I'm listening to a series of podcasts by Emily Mbenda and Alex Hanna, who have also written a book with the interesting title, The AI Con. Now, both of them, Emily Bender in particular, she is a computational linguist. So this is not just an outside attack on generative AI in some way. He is an insider who knows a lot about the computational aspects of these technologies and wants to provide an argument for the better use of this AI. And kind of, yes, they do it in a very negative way by pointing out what other people do wrong, basically, in to kind of put this in a nutshell. One of the areas I just want to point out they're talking about is these large language models are programmed through machine learning. And that sounds like it's done by machines and it doesn't involve any labor and, you know, not that many people because the machines all do it by themselves. That is, of course, not the case. These results of the machine learning get tweaked a lot. That's why the large language models and things like ChatGPT and Gemini and Claude are improving all the time. They also get tweaked afterwards. They're almost like rules and regulations that are being put on top. And those need to be done by people who look through huge amounts of data, get paid very little for it, and are subjected to sometimes, as Bender and Hanna point out in their book, really horrendous kind of prompts and replies from these machines. And their task is to mediate and improve those human-machine interactions in some way. So it's kind of hard work. And some of it is outsourced to other countries, and they document this in there. So we'll probably have a dedicated episode or two about ethics at all, because as a whole, because there are lots of concerns. Teachers have a lot of concerns. Students have a lot of questions. So this is really just us providing a kind of first overview in some way.
Okay, let's move on to something a little more concrete, which is chatbots. So to begin with, ChatGPT and its, I often call them its cousins, like Google Gemini and Claude and Copilot for Microsoft, they are chatbots. You interact with them by talking back and forth with them, even if you only begin by just giving them orders, essentially. They're important for second language applications, because for the first time, we've really got a reasonable way to simulate conversation. Simulate is very important there, as Matt pointed out in our first episode. The AI is not really generating meaning. It's generating forms, and then whoever's interacting with it is extracting meaning from that and building the meaning themselves. But it's a really good simulation in some cases compared to others. In my own case, I tried this out. I used Google Translate Practice. It's a beta on my Google Translate app that I strongly recommend people play with. I think right now it only has like Spanish, French, and German. But I'm trying to, I was trying first to build my French and now also my Spanish. And mostly I've been listening, but I did prompt it to do a role play at a doctor's office. And it generated that. I talked about having a stomach ache, dolor de estómago, and it did a very nice job of asking the kind of things about my symptoms and so on that I would expect the doctor to ask, and trying to understand me and responding when I said, ¿qué significa something? What does this mean? And then giving me an answer that felt like a doctor giving me an answer. So that was my most recent experience. Matt?
Well, I these days I mainly use ChatGPT, so kind of very generic to the way I go into those into the system is basically always in kind of dialogue mode. So it's genuinely treating it as a chatbot, because I believe I almost kind of know. I think that this is their best use, right? They are genuinely chatbots. That's really what these tools are. So whatever the conversation is, whether this is for language practice or for other reasons, the conversational chatbot mode is the best way of doing it. The other thing that made me think of, that's why I have the name of Serge Bibeau on the slide there. Serge has been doing work on what he calls dialogue systems, so basically another word for chatbots, for quite a number of years. And these chatbots are older than Gen AI. This is something that we are so steamrolled by this whole generative AI wave that we sometimes tend to forget. The first chatbot is a piece of software called Eliza, after Eliza Doolittle in My Fair Lady, and written by Joseph Weizenbaum. And that was in 1966 that he published papers on this chatbot and did a lot of things with it. The underlying technology was very different because there were no large language models then. But what these chatbots could do even before machine learning and large language models is very relevant to language education, basically, because it contextualizes, again, about context. There are already things we know about chatbots from before 2022, basically. Mm-hmm. One of the research, you could just Google Serge Bibeau and TSLL, Technology and Second Language Learning. That's what the TSLL stands for. This was a conference at Iowa State University in 2025. Serge Bibeau gave one of the keynotes at that conference. That keynote is available, so you can listen to him. Looking back onto what we already knew about chatbots and contextualizing what is currently going on with these chatbots. I think it's a very useful contribution that Serge made there.
Okay, so the last of our four for today is translation. And obviously, translation is closely tied to language issues. So ChatGPT and its cousins are good translators. Their output in particular, because the output is almost always grammatically correct and so on, it's much less foreign than a lot of earlier translators were. I've been using Google Translate Practice Beta for French, mostly in listening, and translation, as you might think, since it's inside the Google Translate app, actually is a part of what's going on there. It has very nice support for if you don't know a word that's in there or even a phrase, then it will give you the translation, in my case, from French back to English. One thing that is interesting from the AI, generative AI standpoint, is it takes a survey of your interests and then presents material that follow those interests. And you can also give it a prompt to generate a dialogue. I think I'll talk about that later, but one that I remember doing was, since I was going to be visiting my granddaughters, I wanted to know how to talk about my granddaughters in French, and it generated some dialogues for me to listen to and pick out vocabulary from and so on.
I guess I'm being this Torian again in some way, almost looking back, because I really think this is important also for our understanding, our as language teachers, our understanding of these very powerful technologies. They didn't come out of nothing, right? I used to work at the Center for Computational Linguistics at a university in Manchester. And one of the grad students there, who later on became a professor, was Ana Nino. And this was her main research area, was how to apply machine translation at the time, right? This was one of her later papers, 2009. She started this much earlier. How machine translation could be used in language learning and teaching. And she, this 2009 paper, she provides a good overview of the technologies at the time and what was happening at the time. The main thing was what she transferred from the translation industry is this process of post-editing. With new machine translation tools now, Google Translate, Phil already mentioned, there's dedicated companies like DeepL using the same underlying technology, namely language, large language models. Now, that has also catapulted this machine translation forward immensely. So Google Translate of today is very different to Google Translate only 5 years ago. Never mind a little longer than that. So you cannot, I would argue, you cannot use it for post-editing anymore, because any language learner would be very much intimidated by the machine translation output, by the output of Google Translate. So we're more exploring now, as Phil already said, as you said, the interaction with a machine translation tool that is actually helpful, that provides perhaps a phrase, perhaps just a word, in the right context, but it cannot be used as a kind of, oh, start off with machine translation and then edit it afterwards and correct it, because students will not be able to do that, basically, because their accuracy might be lower than that of a machine translation tool, basically, and that wasn't always the case.
Yeah, I think that's true. I'm amazed at what comes out of current translators. Okay, well, to wrap up this episode, we provided background here on what we think teachers need to know now, starting with the first four of our 10 points. Began by saying where that came from, the UNESCO framework and other frameworks for AI competency. We gave examples of the first four areas. Again, the background idea here is that before getting into the individual areas, you should have some idea of what a large language model and its interface, the chatbot, basically is. And then you can go on and explore the other four areas. So, Matt? Where can we find this stuff?
All right. Here on the slide, we're providing these three tiny URL so that it's easier to remember. The first one, OAILL, simply stands for these conversations, opening AI for language learning. And that will link to the list of the podcasts we're preparing. That's actually a page that sits on Phil's website. The second one, PPOAILL, is a page that we're working on that's under construction now, that sits on my blog, the Pantarai blog, which we're going to update regularly with those things. Most importantly, I guess also for this recording, because we've mentioned the paper quite often, this is the last link, the Gen AI, pretty obvious. SIPD is the topic of our paper, is this sustained integrated professional development. that we are proposing for teachers, language teachers, to work with generative AI. I leave it at that and let Phil wrap up.
Yeah. So just like they do in the commercials where they repeat the phone number. So all of those links are at tinyurl.com. And then the endings for my page, it's OAILLPOD. For Matt's, it's PPOAILL. And for the article, it's GENAI-SIPD. So we encourage you to have a look at this, and we'll be back with the other six topics of stuff you need to know now in the next episode. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We are grateful for the support for Opening AI for Language Learning by the Language and Applied Research Center at San Diego State University and the Southern Area International Languages Network, SALIN, which is part of the California World Languages Project. Our producer and editor is Chris Brown. Mario Condo-Fenol is the production coordinator of WILE. Live conversations are moderated and promoted by me, Shana Zamadian. And remember, artificial intelligence is no substitute for natural ignorance. Until next time.